Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Yuri.
Of course. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. I'd like to start off by asking how you describe yourself.
Wonderful. Yes. So I am a success coach. I offer entrepreneurs and career professionals the opportunity to create organic strategic plans to elevate their career, enhance their financial growth, and create personal balance.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Success coach. I like that.
Yeah.
Everybody needs more success in their life. That's great. So I'm guessing what you're doing now is not necessarily what you went to school for. Was there one thing or an important thing that you learned growing up from maybe a parent, a teacher, or mentor that had an impact on what you're doing now?
Yeah, I would say that throughout my educational career, in terms of being a student, my parents used to joke that I was a career student because I started school pretty early, like 2.5, and stayed in school until I was about 26. So most of my life up until this point has been in school. But a lot of what I learned and what was really highlighted at pretty much 90% of the institutions that I attended was a real sense of giving back, especially my time as a prep student and, you know, continued involvement as a prep alumni. That program really influenced me and made sure that I knew that not only did I have potential to do whatever it is that I wanted, mm-hmm. but that as long as I applied myself and had some level of discipline and vision and commitment, I could execute on it and actually live the life that I wanted, even though it would require a bit of bravery. But what doesn't?
Right. So that's – prep for prep, that's quite the tongue twister. I'm not familiar with that. What is the prep for prep?
Yeah, prep for prep is a 14-month academic enrichment program that is – based in New York City. Okay. It targets academically gifted youth from socioeconomically disadvantaged and or minority backgrounds who are usually would be first generation or second generation college graduates to be. And what the program does is it helps them get academically on par with their independent school counterparts and then assists them in the independent school placement process. And then once they're placed there, provides them with a support system through leadership development and post-placement counseling that allows the student, of which I was one, mm-hmm. to really acclimate into the environment and get the most out of the experience while still adjusting to what can at times be a cultural shock.
Right. Wow, that sounds like an amazing program.
Oh, it is. It's fantastic.
Excellent. Is that program still around in New York?
Yes. Yes, okay. It is. It's still around in New York. It's in, oh my gosh, it's almost probably close to its 40th year or late 30s. It started in 1978. So it's been around. It's impacted thousands and thousands of children at this point. It's a small program in that each contingent of students is only about 150. And that's the larger classes. Back in the day, it was like 110, 190, yeah. You know, so it's definitely grown over the years.
Okay. Wow. Would you walk me through then your career from undergrad into what you did, in your early career?
Sure. So undergrad, I attended Wesleyan University in Connecticut, which is a fantastic, fantastic place for a creative mind, for someone who doesn't necessarily want to conform to and or subscribe to what everyone else is doing. Mm-hmm. And it's like a wonderful place because everyone is like, I don't want to be like everyone else. It's everyone is on that same wavelength. So it's a lot of variety in experience. It's a very, I don't want to say it's a bubble, but it's a very safe place in many regards in terms of feeling free to express yourself. I was able to travel and study abroad twice while I was there, and have a really diverse experience in terms of activities that I participated in and things that I did. And, you know, I learned two languages while I was there. I did quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was very supportive environment. So from there, what I think I didn't realize was really important, and what I would say any of your listeners that are still in the college phase, really focus on making quality friendships. Not because, you know, you need to use these people later, but because you don't know who everyone is going to turn out to be. So really think about the way that you treat people, the way that you interact with people, because having good feelings when you go to your 5-year reunion, when you go to your 10-year reunion, and everyone has sort of come into their own, you'll be surprised where people are and how willing they are to extend a hand and say, oh, what are you doing? Let's collaborate, or let us work together, or I have an opportunity that you might be interested in. So that was college. I went directly after that to law school. I attended Rutgers School of Law in Newark. Mm-hmm. That was a great experience in terms of the quality of education that I received. I thought I was going to be a criminal defense attorney and excelled in all aspects of that part of the law. I worked during law school, and my first summer at Prudential Financial Headquarters. Then during my second and third year, I worked at the Attorney General's Office of New York in the Harlem Regional Division, doing investigations and partnering with the Assistant Attorney General that's now a judge, mm-hmm. Who was working there, the Honorable Guy Mitchell. And after that, I graduated and I clerked for a family court judge, the Honorable Judge Nelson in Hudson County Family Court, handling DIFAS cases, which to some people are DFACS or ACS, depending on where you live. It's the Department of Youth and Family Services. Okay. So it was a pretty grim, caseload in terms of the nature of the cases we were handling. Yeah. And obviously at that point I'd had a variety of experience in the law. I worked in corporate, I worked in the government, I worked in the judicial branch. And then when I moved to Atlanta, I worked briefly in a small real estate firm. And none of it really made me happy or excited me, which was at first a very grim realization, because of course you invest time, you invest money. But long story short, you know, after I was able to accept that I needed to, you know, stop mourning what could have been and focus on what is, I realized that there was more that I could offer, that there was skills that I had that, you know, I could still use my law school education. It wasn't sort of all in vain, which many people have that thought when they're taking a career path that is maybe outside of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. So, and especially, you know, you guys in the arts have always had a tough go of it, being sort of the textbook non-traditional career path. You know, parents asking you, well, are you sure you don't want to just like, go get an MBA? Or you sure you want to get an MFA instead of a, you know, a bachelor, or, you know, a BFA instead of a BS or a BA or whatever? And the truth is that as long as you are not to sound cliche, but following your heart in a practical way, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can't dance at all, like you can't dance a lick and you can't sing a lick, maybe being like a Broadway, you know, headliner might not be in the cards in terms of musical theater.
Right.
But there may be a slew of other things in musical theater. You know, maybe you're a great set designer, or maybe you are an incredible writer, and that's really what your passion for performing comes from. There are other avenues where you could still experience the industry and the life that you want without necessarily going the route, the typical route. There isn't one way to skin a cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's I think that's where a lot of, you know, particularly I think I also had this issue too when I was going through a few different art schools is, you know, you pick a path and you say, I want to be this exact thing. So, you know, I want to be a painter. Actually, that's what I wanted to be originally, which then transferred to something else. But when you then realize that it's that maybe just being, you know, a painter, or when I switched over to being a designer, that career path maybe is not what you're cut out to be, or there's, you know, a lot more involved than you realize, it is really hard to kind of switch over, because if you've only focused your energy on this one thing, so it's sometimes it's hard to see where your skills can translate from one field to another.
And you know what else? It's, I think we don't give enough credit or permission to ourselves to say, you know what, I tried it, but I actually don't like it. Mm-hmm. Like, not liking it is also good enough reason to not do something. You know, and one piece of advice that one of my old sort of legal mentors gave me was, you do a lot of things so that you know what you don't like. Mm-hmm. And by knowing what you don't like, that's how you figure out what you do like. Mm-hmm. And you have to sort of, you know, eat a lot of gross mystery jelly beans before you find the cherry one that you like, or the licorice, or whatever is your flavor, right? Because right. Everyone has a different thing. Like, someone could look at me and say, God, you left law to be a success coach. I wouldn't want to talk to people and help people plan stuff all day. That's like my nightmare, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then, of course, you shouldn't be a success coach, you know? Whereas I may look at someone who is like an engineer and say, wow, I love that you're inventing stuff, but I could never sit in front of formulas all day and like scientific method. Like, that would drive me crazy, you know. But that's why no one can really tell you what to do on your journey. That's why it's really, you got to get in there and get your hands dirty.
Oh yeah, definitely. So it's funny that you mentioned engineering. I actually started off my career going to school for mechanical engineering. And I dropped out the moment we had a substitute professor who came in. He was a rocket scientist from NASA. And I forget what class it was, but very heavily math-based, because that's what a lot of the engineering profession is. And I didn't realize that at the time. But as we were just chatting normally, I asked him a question of like, you know, I don't really feel like I belong here, because everybody is so excited about like math and equations and like building mechanical and robots. And I don't care about any of that. And he was like, okay, that's great. So why are you here? And no one had ever asked me that question before. And it was so like profound that I actually dropped out the next day and, you know, transferred to another university and then tried another career path. But yeah, like the idea of like questioning what it is that you're doing. It's okay to suddenly say, I think I want to change my mind because this isn't really what I thought it was, and this is not what I really want to do. In your instance, I'm curious then, so what was it that made you want to make that switch over and start your own company as a success coach?
Yeah, so basically after doing all those different things in the law, and, you know, feeling like none of them really made me happy, and I couldn't see myself doing any of them long term. Mm-hmm. I started to sort of deconstruct what I knew I'd like to do, which was helping people. That's how the whole law thing got started. I want to help people. I want to change the world one person at a time, whatever, you know?
Sure.
So I connected, ironically enough, back with Prep for Prep and did some sort of part-time nonprofit work, you know, because I could be sure that what I was doing there was good and was helping people. So I went back there, and they were kind enough to sort of let me participate in a few different aspects of their nonprofit. So did a little development, did a little admissions, and, you know, sort of had worked in the program as an advisor years before. So I had, you know, to get a real understanding if the nonprofit world was exactly where I wanted to be too. And realized through that process that while I loved Prep, I didn't really love the nonprofit world.
Okay.
Like, I would do anything for Prep, but I don't think I was like, no, I don't want to work in a nonprofit. maybe a benefit corporation, but not sure. A nonprofit.
Wait, so why was it that nonprofit work wasn't what you wanted to do?
Well, again, because while I was so enamored of the mission of Prep and something like that, I didn't have the same connection to any other nonprofit that I did like I did to Prep. And so I wouldn't be willing to go through many of the textbook sacrifices that one must endure when working with a nonprofit.
Sure.
Unless you're working for a nonprofit like CARE International or something that's like has a $1 billion budget that is supplemented by the government mostly.
Okay.
You know? So, which was good, right? I got the opportunity to come down to Atlanta and to be a part of a startup that was sort of like somewhat consciously minded. I mean, it was very consciously minded in terms of their business model was they helped to get apartments for their consumers, and then they paid their consumers part of the referral fee that they would receive from the apartment complex as sort of a thank you for working with them. And it was a great company, a great opportunity to learn a lot of different administrative, and I worked there as a director of operations, so a lot of system skills, creating systems and all that. But again, end of the day, it's like, I'm not like I'm not just like a systems computer person.
Yeah.
Like, this is cool. Having a business is cool, but like not this particular business. Okay. So I very, you know, respectfully parted ways with the company, and we're still, you know, everything is still on great terms there. But I actually was feeling sort of a little, you know, like, okay, well, what's next? What's my next step? And I had begun my business, aworldofrivera.com, and it had started to take it shape with sort of some of the aspects, sort of the spirit and the body aspect through yoga and the spiritual advisement work that I do. And it did not feel complete. It didn't feel rounded out. Something was missing. And I sought out advisement from my sort of spiritual advisor, my mentor. Mm-hmm. And she reminded me that there was this path in coaching that I had identified and that there was a strong desire to pursue, but that I simply had not taken action on. Okay. And as a result of her reminding me of that, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, thank you so much. And I just sought out after it because I had no good reason for not having taken action. I simply had forgotten or had just, you know, gotten distracted or whatever with life. Mm-hmm. And when I sought it out, immediately the universe answered. Literally within a week, I was enrolled and had been accepted to, was enrolled and had gotten a partial scholarship to a really respected coaching program.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I say all that to say that when you are ready to surrender to the process of figuring out what it is that you actually want to do, mm-hmm. and you take yourself down of the whipping post of, oh, I'm not doing what I said, or I'm not doing this second or third or maybe even fourth path. Like, again, you can try a lot of different things and decide you don't want to do them. The universe will take care of you, you know, call it whatever you want, whatever your religion is, it's sort of the law of cause and effect. You say, I'm ready, and that causes things to happen, and as an effect, opportunities get presented to you, you start going down that path.
Interesting, very interesting. And I really like that idea, too, of opening yourself up and to new opportunities and being available for them. So because you work on success, what is success defined for you, and how do you help your clients create their own definition of success?
Yeah, wonderful question, Yuri. For me, success, what I've had to learn is that success is a malleable concept. We get into a really dicey place when success becomes this rigid, finite, in stone thing, mm-hmm. because we are changing as humans. So we have to allow what we vision for our success to also change. We also have to understand that what we may initially deem to be success, once we set out on that path, or once we recognize that that's sort of a macro goal, that there are many sub phases that we need to pass through that will lead us to that ultimate vision of success that we also should celebrate as successes. So to answer your question more directly in terms of Wilda Rivera, for me, success right now is having a bustling business where I am connecting with individuals who are really dedicated to their personal and professional development, who are ready, willing, and able to create organic strategic plans and are open to having an accountability partner whose main focus is ensuring that they're getting where they want to go. In addition to that, creating international experiences for people to experience personal growth through yoga, mm-hmm. Through the yoga retreats that I offer. And, you know, of course, I would be totally remiss if I didn't say having a well-balanced personal life. Because success is nothing if you have no one to share it with, or if you're completely burned out. If you're burned out, you're likely not acknowledging your successes, mm-hmm. passing them by, and alienating yourself from others because you're just so exhausted that you don't have the energy or the wherewithal to actually engage with and share your hard work, which is actually what makes it satisfying with other people who are going to celebrate and encourage you to keep it up.
Mm-hmm. In your own business, how do you approach your own work-life balance? And because, you know, you mentioned how important it is, how do you do that on your own? And then how do you encourage your clients to keep a proper work-life balance? Because I know it's, as you just mentioned, it's really, sometimes it's hard to figure out what is your priority at that time, especially if you're building up a new company and trying to give it your all. How do you do that?
Absolutely. For me, first of all, I think that it's important for each individual to really understand how they best connect with people. So I am a verbal person. I'm a very tactile person. So for me, interpersonal interaction is even more important because that's really where I get sort of rejuvenated. Of course, spending time sort of alone in a defragmented brain space, you know, not doing work. But then also, I like talking to people. I like engaging with people. That sort of keeps me going, right? Mm-hmm. Others are more sort of relaxed or more nonverbal. And so it's important for you, number one, to understand how you best engage. So the way that I do it is I make sure, because my partner is also an entrepreneur. He works in the real estate and construction industry. He's also an actor and a writer and a speaker. So we're both all over the place doing things all the time. So an occasional check-in, you know, text message or a voice note from myself to him or to close friends, because you would be surprised at just hearing someone else's voice just saying, hey, what's up? That can really do a lot for you if you've been working for 5 hours and have only been looking at your cat mm-hmm. or your dog or just yourself if you don't have any pets, right?
Yeah.
On the flip side, for those of you in the art world, because there are notoriously long hours in the art world and notoriously sort of different schedules, artists always seem to be sort of on this night schedule, this later afternoon schedule, just because of the nature of performing and putting things together. It's important to block time to say, okay, I have this 6 month really intense project that I'm working on, but every Sunday after 12, I'm not going to do any work and I'm going to be able to just be on my couch or be with my dog, or, you know, every Sunday during that time, I'm going to meet up with a different friend. Right. And if that Sunday time should be taken over, you know, my backup time is Friday after 6 or whatever, based on, you know, realistically based on what your schedule is. We have to prioritize that. We have to sort of schedule it, right? Otherwise, it's not going to be urgent enough until we're burned out. Humans have a tendency with tasks to focus on what is urgent rather than what is important and relevant. If we spent more time focusing on what is important and relevant rather than what is urgent, less things would get to an urgent phase and we would potentially waste less time on the things that are irrelevant and completely unimportant.
Interesting. So with that, how do you manage your time and focus? So is it with, you know, things that are urgent versus things that are, you know, relevant and the big things that move the needle? Do you just like focus on like big, like one or two big ideas in a day? Do you structure things more linearly, like in a calendar? How do you handle that?
Yeah, so it's actually a combination of all of those things. And this sort of to piggyback the answer for the last question, this is also what I encourage my clients to do in terms of creating their balance, right? Now, planning is very important. Looking at your week, looking at your day, the further out you could get in terms of if you could look at your week, that's ideal. If you could look at a 2 weeks period of time in terms of the certain projects that you want to get accomplished that move the needle, as you say, towards your overall goal, then that will really help you to visualize how it is that you are sort of climbing that little mountain. Whereas if you're doing 1,000 different things, I used to do 1,000 different things all at the same time. And I would have multiple days when I was just starting out where I would be like, I don't know what I did today, but, you know, to use a sort of a colloquial parlance from the UK, I don't know what happened, but I feel like I got shagged backwards through a hedge. Because I am just, you know, I am spinning, but I know that I've been at this computer. I have a migraine, but what did I do? Right.
Yeah.
And I very quickly realized that I needed a better plan, that I needed to have more of a structure. And what I will tell people out there is that whatever it is that you do, know that there's always room for improvement. There's always room for investigating other systems and tools that can help you work smarter. Not because, you know, this person is better than you or whatever, but listen, if something's going to save me 4 hours or something's going to save me 6 hours or a week, then forget whatever I thought my great system was. I'll adopt that system with a quickness, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is a man who specializes in high performance. His name is Todd Herman. And I came across his information towards the end of last year. And, you know, like I said, I had a system or whatever, but I was like, listen, this guy has a better system. He works with athletes in high performance. He works with big businessmen in high performance. Like, clearly, I could probably learn something from this guy. And from taking his 90-day year course, right, and it's not for everyone, okay, I'll put that disclaimer out there. It's for people who really are focused on performing at a high level, who are comfortable with really diving deep and taking that, you know, microscope to their business, to their behavior, to their routines, and saying, what can I freaking ditch? And what do I really need to improve on? Like, where do I need to tighten up? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so through that program, I was really able to hone and fine tune and adapt some of his, many of his systems, you know, and sort of release some of my systems just because his were better. And it allowed me to also pick up a few new tools and a change of perspective around the way that I look at time, right? And so sort of coming back to the themes, right? One of the things that he talks about that I wasn't aware of thinking about was sort of theming your weekdays so that no matter how you get knocked off of your game, you know that if Monday is marketing, you know, no matter how someone may have pulled your attention for an hour, whatever, you come back, okay, what the hell am I doing? Oh, marketing. Okay. Let me do something marketing related. It's Monday, you know, and, you know, so for me, you know, he also wants you to, he talks about theming your quarters, theming your days of the week, and then looking at those days of the week and really arranging your projects and tasks that you have going on in your micro goals, or what he refers to as 2-week sprints, putting those in those 2-week sprints, and that really helping you to avoid, as you asked, you know, okay, do you focus on urgent things? That's what he might refer to as, you know, or any business person as like putting out a fire. So we don't want to have to put out a lot of fires, although they're going to crop up, right? We want to mostly be focused on tending the garden. So when you're focused on the important and relevant tasks, then you're tending the garden. And the issue is that fires are going to crop up. You're going to have to take care of them. And the mind, if not tasked with structure, can get sucked into Facebook or Instagram or whatever. If you don't have a really clear idea of when I log on to Facebook, I am spending 20 minutes going to my closed Facebook group and answering questions, and that's it. You know, adding people, and then I'm getting off. Mm-hmm. You know, when I get on my email, I'm simply searching for new subscribers, adding them to my mailing list and getting off. Not let me open my email, see what's happening, delete a bunch of these new coupon offers, you know, oh, mom wants to know when I'm coming for Easter. I don't know. Let me look up flights. You know, you have to sort of, and I say this in a terms of like the universal you, like I have to be this for myself. You know, you have to be accountable. And sometimes what I'll say a tip is if you actually get to planning your week in advance, right? Mm-hmm. You look at the times each day that you have available and you create sort of a, like a mini schedule. So I have a whiteboard and a planner. And I believe in sort of all the technological gadgets and all the notifications. That's all cool. But when you drop your phone in the toilet or your phone gets broken or someone steps on it, then what? Right? So I believe in backing all that up analog. So I'm a visual person. Again, it's important to know how you learn, how you're best reminded. I'm a visual person, so, and a kinesthetic person. So writing it helps it like sink into my form, my humanity, mm-hmm. and having it on my whiteboard helps me to be constantly reminded of it when I'm just in the environment. So if on a Sunday, so for me tomorrow, I'll look at next week. I'll look at what I have going on, sort of my pre-set appointments. I'll look at the gaps of time each day. And then I'll look at my 2-week, what's left of my 2-week tasks and projects around my business. And I will assign those projects and tasks to specific days and will try to estimate how much time it will take me to accomplish those tasks. so that I can actually have a game plan and say, okay, well, I have to send another 5 podcast pitches out that might take me an hour or, you know, 25 and whatever the mm-hmm. amount of time is, so that I can be more realistic and not try to be like, okay, well, on Monday I'm going to do 6 of these 7 things. No, that doesn't make sense. Right. And the goal is to set yourself up so you feel like you're building, and you actually are building momentum, rather than feeling like you constantly have this unending to-do list that you can never make a dent in.
I really like that idea, because you're right. Sometimes, actually for me too, it feels like I'm just having like a to-do list that's just like never ending of like, well, I'll just add more things onto this because it all has to get done. So in your own time and focus, are there routines that you have then developed that you stick to, or rituals that set up your day and your week and your quarters for success? I know you mentioned a little bit about them, but I'm just curious on like your day-to-days. Is there like a blocks of time you're like, you know what, this is my personal time no matter what happens, and then this time is set aside for my business development?
Yeah, and you know what, I always tell audiences that I speak to, I'm a human, right? And so just like I tell you that you should always be thinking about different ways that you can improve and tighten up, you know, one of the ways that I, for example, am working on tightening up is having that non-negotiable block of time where I am focused on my sort of personal grounding for the day. I am so business focused at this period of my life, and because I also work in yoga and all of that, that is so much part of my business that I need to be better about saying, you know, this 1 hour every day, even if I have to wake up at 7, is when I meditate and do like my 6 sun salutations just for Owilda. But aside from that, I swear by the calendar. I swear by planning your week on Sunday. And listen, you have to be a little flexible, especially early in your business. I would be mistaken if I told someone just starting out, okay, well, you need to be rigid about your time. And, you know, if someone wants to meet with you on 5 o'clock on a Wednesday and that's your meditation time, just say no. Because at first you need to be available to build relationships so you can have a reputation that people start to come and agree to do things on your time, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to be somewhat flexible. But what I will say is you have to block your time. So if you block your time, you're less likely to run into that period where you're like, oh, dang, I didn't work out this week. Or I didn't send any follow-up emails this week. Or I didn't do any social media on Hootsuite this week. Because you've had those blocks of time, and maybe you got to switch Monday and Wednesday because you got an appointment, and yippee for you, because that's awesome, you're getting paid. But you got to put that time somewhere else, right? So you have to have a way to quickly look at your schedule, know what's happening, and be able to secure those blocks so that they don't just simply get taken and knocked off to the side. That's something that I think is really important. Also, having, you know, a theme, not just a theme, but a goal, right? A goal for a shorter period of time is important. So incremental goals. So let's say, I don't know, you are a photographer and you have a few portfolios, you have a website, but you're looking to secure an agent and to put up a show and sell, I don't know, $10,000 worth of your prints by, you know, the end of the year. Okay. Let me rephrase that. You can certainly just set out after that and just, you know, throw a bunch of darts at the board and see what hits. But if you were my client, right, what we would work on is identifying the micro phases and the best way to prioritize those things so that your success would be more guaranteed, so that you would inevitably and actually do the things that are going to make you get a new agent. Make sure your show goes up and that you're connecting with the actual patrons that can afford to bring you 10,000 as well as whatever your next installation is going to be. That's what is really the focus of my job as a success coach, but what is really important for anyone and what I practice myself. I always tell people, you know, I'm not just, it's like Hair Club for Men. I'm not just the president. I'm also a member.
Of course. I'm curious in your own, so in your own journey and then how you teach clients, what is your approach to fear and overcoming it?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, fear is natural. Fear, when we start to get out of our comfort zone, it's like, you know, like that's, it's a part of life. Okay. I'll just say that. As a coach, I'm very ethically committed to staying on the side of coaching and not entering into any sort of therapy realm. But as a certified emotional intelligence coach, I do have some of the tools to broach the topic ethically without sort of getting into a therapy thing. And what I mean by that is in therapy, a lot of the focus is, you know, going to the past, reliving that, deconstructing it, really getting into those emotions and, you know, providing a turnaround to it or thinking about ways that we could approach it differently next time, whatever. As a coach, my job is to identify, okay, where is this fear creating an obstacle to future progress, right? What are the tools we currently have that can help us to change our perspective around it and or address it head on in terms of, okay, if it's, I don't have the skills, okay, well, what skills do you need? Are those skills that we can develop internally or do you have to go externally to get them? You know, which is very different than a therapist saying, well, how did you feel about that? What did you think about? Okay, like, all right, well, let's think about, you know, it's very different. So in terms of fear, it's identifying how it's showing up as an obstacle to your progress, how it is that we can strategically plan around it, over it, become like water, right? Water, it sees a barrier and it goes over it, it goes through it, it goes under it, it goes around it. It's not a barrier. It's water. It's like, okay, thing, you're here. Nice. Bye. And that's really sort of the attitude I try to cultivate with my clients around it. It's like, okay, fear is natural. It's like a baby. When a baby falls, if you're like, oh my God, oh no, are you okay? The baby starts crying. If you're like, okay, cool. You pick them up, you dust them off, you clap, yay, you're fine, you know, and everything keeps moving. You know, not to compare my clients to babies, they're wonderful. But in terms of my mentality, they feed off of that energy. So if I start freaking out, they're not going to feel very taken care of. They're not going to feel like I know what the heck I'm doing. If I'm like, oh no, what are you going to do, Tom? So, you know, and then in my own personal life, again, just curtain up. Yes, I've experienced fear, self-doubt, all of those things. But I think the most important thing, like I said, and like I tell my clients, is acknowledging that, yeah, that's going to happen. Okay, well, let's take a second. Let's acknowledge it. Because if we don't, then it's going to get bigger than what it is. It's going to start to take up more mental real estate, and that's going to make you ineffective and not productive. So let's acknowledge it. Let's see where it's coming from. Let's strategize about it, and let's freaking enact our plan and stick to our plan. And before you know it, it kind of just fades away because you're doing the thing, the very thing that you were afraid of and or getting the results that you were afraid of getting because you didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. But you took the time to figure it out and go after it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I really like your systematic approach to it. That I think that really helps demystify the fear as just being this like made up thing. What would you say is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received is to, and it's going to sound very cliche, but do what you love and love what you do. Do, because honestly, I'm a person, and I don't know about you guys out there, but I feel like I'm an Aquarius, and Aquarius are very creative people. If I don't feel useful, like I'm being creative, like I am actually making a difference. And also for you millennials out there, you know, you get a real bad rap for being ADD, but it's simply that you care and you're passionate about a lot of different things, right? If I don't feel like I'm able to be passionate and do those things, then I feel like, what the hell am I doing? Why am I doing this? Ugh. You know, it starts to feel like work. And if you love what you do and you do what you love, there will be some hard days. I'm not saying it's going to be freaking rainbows and unicorns and just the money pouring in from day one. It's going to be work, but it's not going to feel like this soul-sucking thing that you are literally dreading every single day. You know, mm-hmm. You instead are going to have the moments of, like I said, self-doubt, fear, oh crap. You know, is this going to work? Are people going to care? You know, but then you do the things, you do the research, you recalibrate, you know, you see what works, you see what doesn't work, and you keep going. But you love it, right? You love what you do, and that makes it so that it's fun, and you want to keep doing it. And eventually, you know, you're going to make it make money if you're really dedicated to it, and it's really what you know you should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Wilda, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate your time. If the listeners would like to get a hold of you and see more about what you do and what you're working on, what is the best way they can do that?
Definitely. They can contact me at www.owildarivera.com. I am going to send over to Yuri a bunch of information, links that he has been kind enough to put in the show notes with my LinkedIn, my closed Facebook group called the Success Suite, which is a totally free closed Facebook community where you can connect with other entrepreneurs, creatives, business professionals who are focused on personal and professional development. Every week you get a new success tip and challenge, and every 5 weeks, we do a little Facebook Live sort of recap debrief on the tips. You'll also get a link to a free download, the 5 key characteristics of successful entrepreneurs. It's not just a informational, but also a little worksheet that you can do to sort of see where you stand with those traits. You'll also get information about my website. For those of you who are wanderlusters and like to travel and get your sort of yoga on, I do have an awesome yoga retreat coming up. It's called Cuba Escape, October 5th to 9th. It's an all-inclusive trip to Varadero and Havana. If you're interested, visit awildarivera.com. There's a lot more information about that. It will definitely be one for the books.
Wow, So I've always wanted to go to Cuba. That sounds so exciting.
Yuri, you should totally come.
I am definitely going to be looking at it after this podcast, so thank you so much. I've been trying to find an excuse to go to Cuba, not that I really need one, but it sounds absolutely amazing. You get to hang out in Cuba and do yoga. That's wow. So thank you so much, Wilda, that you've been more than generous with your time, and I will link everything that you talked about in the show notes, which is just a plethora of fantastic information. Thank you again for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, guys.
Of course. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Advance Your Art Podcast. If you liked this episode, please go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button so that every single time I release a new episode, it will go directly to you without even thinking about it. If you're interested in hearing older episodes, please go to advanceyourart.com where you can find the catalog of everything I've done so far, as well as contact information and projects I'm working on. Thank you again, and have a great day.